This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Well, I've also noticed that since I started at AIU, I eat way less every day.
Yeah, because you're on a set schedule.
Yeah, like
and you have things to keep you busy,
right? Like I don't mind. It's weird. I'm used to dispatching. I'm just fucking pounding food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So because of my
No, 178. Last week you tried to do 176.
I know, because it still says 176 in my notes. Yeah. Oh,
crap! I accidentally started the Blizzard launcher. Damn it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 178. What did you watch this week?
Nope.
My name is Mike.
Nope.
It is. That's my name.
My name is John.
Started a new job. I haven't watched shit this week.
Because I watched a lot of shows.
I either went to bed at 8 p.m.
He's still adjusting to regular work hours.
Yeah, I'm working 7:30 to 4. That's my hours, by the way. I found out Monday it's 7:30 to 4.
Awesome.
About 4:30.
Which is mine.
Half hour lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7:30 to 4 for me, too.
Yeah.
Half hour lunch.
Yeah. Dude, way better.
We're set.
Yeah. Yeah, we
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I told Kate we got to bring Steak Night back.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, anyway.
We got to do a lot of things.
Yeah, we do. So, yeah. I haven't watched much of anything.
Okay.
Because I just haven't.
Well, you gave us an either or. You said I was either going to bed at 8 o'clock.
Oh, or I'm working on my or running around for crap for my vehicle.
Right, because your vehicle broke.
Yeah, my vehicle broke. I got it back
again.
Now. Yeah, yeah. Or doing schoolwork.
Mm-hmm.
We have a show about stuff we watched, and my portion is not going to be very fruitful for a little while now. I think.
Okay.
So I can get back in the saddle about things. Because the one thing I would talk about the most that I watched, you're watching tomorrow night.
Right. And yeah. That would be the movie It.
I went to the drive-in last Saturday night, and me and cousin Johnny watched the It double feature at Pride's Corner. We got It, and then It Chapter 2. It rained a little bit while we were at the drive-in, but it wasn't bad because it wasn't downpouring, and it was just enough that I put new windshield wipers on about a month ago, so that was good.
Nice.
But, yeah, it was. I enjoyed both flicks.
Nice.
I will say watching them back to back like that was a lot of fun.
I bet. Yeah.
Especially I hadn't seen the first one since the last time I saw it in the theaters. Come all the way through.
Right.
And I would have to say I enjoyed part one better.
That seems to be the general consensus.
But part two is excellent.
It's much better when a clown is scaring kids than adults.
It still works though. Because, well, you'll see. I will say this, part two is still excellent, and I made this, I don't know if I told you or Johnny or somebody else, I know I said to Johnny, but like, for instance, you watch a movie like the original 1978 John Carpenter Halloween, love that movie, I think it's phenomenal.
Yep.
And then you go to the Rob Zombie's first Halloween, I love that movie, I think it's phenomenal. I wouldn't say Rob Zombie's is better than John Carpenter's, I wouldn't say it's worse. I enjoy both of them thoroughly,
mm-hmm.
but I love the first Halloween, the 1978 version, and I enjoy watching it again and again just as much. I have no care in the world to watch the original It miniseries anymore.
No.
None whatsoever.
The only reason would be Tim Curry, but
even then. I mentioned that to John, and he's like, but see, for him, that was like the first like thing that he watched that scared him, so he's got a little bit more.
Really?
Yeah, well, he's
that younger. Scared him.
Yeah, I guess.
Really?
Well, he was probably like 12 when he watched it. So anyways, Johnny has an emotional attachment to the flick.
Right, absolutely. I get that.
I don't, and quite frankly, I don't care if I ever saw it again in life because it just this is so much superior.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentioned something that I had never known.
Okay.
Apparently, in the book, the kids when they're 11 and 12 have an orgy.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Stephen King wrote an orgy for kids?
Well, okay. So when they're in the tunnels,
yeah.
They're in the sewers, yeah. Looking for Pennywise or trying to get out.
Yeah.
They get lost. It's dark. They're scared. They're starting to turn on each other. And so Beverly gets this great idea that she's going to fuck all of them individually to try and bring them back together.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I didn't believe it either.
I don't believe it.
It's there.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I see that you have a copy of the book on the table right now. Is that part dog-eared?
No, I didn't dog-ear it, but it's there. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I was blown away by that, too. Yeah. Like
That bothers me.
It kind of does me, too. Like, hold on a second. Here we go. I'm on the old Wikipedia now. It, 2017 film, adaptation of the Stephen King novel of the same name. Find ORGY. Oop, there it is. Bill enters the monster's mind with the help of Bill is able to defend him back in slumber. The losers get into the sewers. Okay. After the battle, the losers get lost in the sewers until the losers perform an orgy to bring back the unity of the group. The book's sexual content arose controversy. Smythe considered the book's description of childhood sexuality to be questionable.
Questionable?
And particularly shocked by a scene about the Losers Club engaging in an orgy. However, Hendricks identified this moment as, in a sense, the heart of the book and the thematic demonstration of the crossing from childhood to adulthood, and concluded that it is a way for King to tell kids that sex, even unplanned sex, even sex that's kind of weird, even sex when a girl loses her virginity in the sewer, can be powerful and beautiful if the people having it truly respect and like each other.
What?
Yep.
I am by no means a prude. Okay? Yep. At any given time, if you popped open my iPad, you'd find several tabs of porn. However, I don't see how you can say that an orgy of 11 and 12-year-olds, where she basically says, I'll have sex with each one of you so that it brings the group back together.
Well, I don't know the verbiage, and touching. I haven't read it, but I'll read it before next week.
I don't see where that can be, like, beautiful and emotionally touching.
I don't know. I didn't read it. I just... But like Stephen King's been asked about it, and it's not like 30 years later, he's like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. He's like, no.
Huh. The funny thing is,
Stephen King does have a cameo in this film.
King, a lot of the stuff, especially his earlier stuff, was written based on things in his life,
mm-hmm.
or things that he experienced or people that he knew.
Yeah.
Wonder if that happened.
You know, Carrie opens with the girl taking the girl's shower room, and she, girl has a period
favorite thing, period piece,
and thinking she's thinking that she's dying. I mean,
right. But I mean, that happens,
right?
You know,
well, I don't think they think they're dying.
She was a sheltered person.
Well, there was that girl one time when the fireworks started going off. She thought the Al Qaeda was bombing us, and she sped down Western Avenue and then drove her car into three other vehicles and crashed into the gas pumps at the Big Apple. That was interesting.
No.
Those are just fireworks. No one's shelling you. And it wasn't like she was having like PTSD flashbacks from being in the armed services. She's just straight up crazy.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, I had never heard that. And Johnny's like, well, I was wondering... Like it wasn't in the original, because he asked me, have you ever read the book? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, well, I was wondering how they're going to handle the sex scene with the kids, because they didn't address it in the miniseries, so I don't know how they're going to handle it in the movies. And I'm like, whoa,
okay.
Whoa.
They didn't address it in the miniseries? Was he really thinking that an ABC miniseries?
Well, no, that's what they meant. Like,
have you seen the Honest trailer for that, by the way?
No.
Where they're like, coming up right after America's Funniest Home Videos,
yeah.
The clown that will try to eat your children.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that. I'll have to go back and watch it now. But anyways, he's just like, well, what he meant was basically like it's not in the movie. It's not in the miniseries.
Right.
These are rated R films. He didn't know if it would somehow be addressed.
Touch upon the orgy.
No. Yeah.
Who's that guy that recently? Never mind. I'm just going to move on then.
James McAvoy's awesome. Always. Bill Hader's awesome in this.
Did you see the behind the scenes with that?
No.
So basically, Bill Hader went up to Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I saw that. I think I saw that image.
Yeah. He basically, he went up to him and he was like, so I got to ask you, how do they do the CGI? He goes, what do you mean CGI? He goes, how do they do that CGI where they make your eye go to the side? And he goes like this, because he can do it on command. And he did it, and Hader freaked out. Ran off. He was not expecting. He honestly thought that it was a digital thing that they did.
Oh, that's
then,
awesome.
And then he did it just standing effects. There. Yeah.
Yep. Jessica Chastain is Beverly.
Yep.
Great.
See, I was concerned about that because Beverly was such a plain girl, and Jessica Chastain is.
No. They make her plain.
Okay, good.
Actually, it's amazing how, like, especially how, like, the adult and the kid versions, like, they make them very similar and believable that it's them as kids and adults, especially the guy, James Ransom, who played the Eddie, mm-hmm. the adult Eddie. Yeah. Like, that was the creepiestly similar of the two.
I love that. I'm always a huge fan when they get somebody.
Because if you look at, like, what was it? Jonathan Brandis was the kid and Harry Anderson was the adult.
Yeah.
No. Not buying it. Well, I'm not, like, buying anything with Jonathan Brandis.
Man. Again, one of my favorites is Amy Pond.
Yeah.
You know, young Amy and older Amy.
Yes.
And
yes.
Young Amy was actually her niece.
Yes.
You know, she took her to audition.
First, but yeah, that's cool.
She took her to audition and they were like, hey, why don't you stick around?
But, I really enjoyed the movie. I can't wait for you to watch it so you can
I've got my tickets for tomorrow night.
Friday the 13th.
Yep.
Johnny's coming over tomorrow night. We're going to watch Friday the 13th in 3D. Part 3 in 3D.
I was going to say, that's
part 3. Part 3 in 3D. I bought the DVD. It comes with two of the cheesy 3D glasses with the blue and the red lenses. I'm super excited.
Wait a minute. How many did it come with?
Came with two pair.
Okay. So when you invited me over, you were secretly hoping I wouldn't come over?
No. Johnny bought it as well. Oh, okay. His came with two as well.
Because you were like, oh, you can come over. And you're like, please don't. We only have two.
No. We have four pair of the classic 3D glasses. We're all
like holding them side to side. Like, let's both look through them.
I bought this DVD over a year ago. And it's one of those things, like, just waiting for the right time to watch it. And finally, that's tomorrow.
It's a good time to do it. It's on Friday the 13th.
And it's a full moon tomorrow night. Glad I'm not in dispatch to hear all the fucking dumbass jokes about it being not only a full moon night, but Friday the 13th. And people are going to go crazy. But that's just every day.
Yeah.
People are just fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. No. So what did you watch?
I watched zero movies.
Sweet.
But I watched a bunch of TV because I actually forgot to talk about some last week.
Oh, yeah?
I had forgotten that I was still watching The Righteous Gemstones and On Becoming a God in Southern Florida.
Oh, go ahead and bust them down.
Dude, The Righteous Gemstones, if you have HBO, you really got to check this out. It is a pleasure to watch this show. It's already been renewed for a second season. It's like I've said before, it's that same kind of humor that you see in like 30 minutes or less. You know, mm-hmm. It's a Danny McBride thing and it's got his fingerprints all over. Yeah. Like in this most recent episode, the group of women. OK, so you've got like the Gemstone brothers and their father and their sister. But then you've got like the ushers and the pastors that help them out, you know, collecting the money and running the business of the. So those guys, a group of three of them, had all gone to Atlanta together, got hookers and cocaine and stuff like that. And that's why, what is going on? I'm telling you this and you're just like,
no, I'm just keep going.
So that's why he was getting blackmailed. Danny McBride's character mm-hmm. was getting blackmailed. Well, in this episode, one of the wives says she got into her husband's account because he left his email logged in on his computer. And she was reading the email chain that they had going back and forth saying, you know, oh, ATL was sick. This is awesome, blah, blah, blah. And so Danny McBride's wife refused to believe that he had anything to do with it because he is a good Christian man and he is a man of God. There is no way that he would do anything like that. And he gave the most bullshit excuse. He's like, well, the letter said what? ATL was sick? Well, yes, it was a movie. And he goes, I've got it right here on Wikipedia and I can read you the description of it. It's about troubled youth down in Atlanta. And it was a sick movie, and those children need to be brought to Christ. And she's like, I knew it was you. I knew you were okay. It was bad. But this most recent episode also dealt with there's one character who hangs out with Adam Devine all the time. He's a reformed Satanist. He still has 666 tattooed across his chest, but, you know, he's found the light and he's very thankful that the gemstones brought him around. But now he kind of has to go to a place where his old satanic buddies are and they're trying to lure him back in. It's just, it's a great show. It really is. I'm not even doing it justice, but it's one of those that I strongly recommend everybody watch. And the same thing, honestly, with On Becoming a God in Central Florida. You know, it's an hour long. It's on Showtime, but it's Kirsten Dunst is just trying to make a living. And she keeps getting pulled into this, you know, the pyramid scheme, the FAM, F-A-M. And they have to do the Garbo method. And Garbo's the guy who runs the thing. It's really, it's twisted. And it's weird. And it's very white trashy. And all my life, I've either been around people who have been in these pyramid schemes, or I've been, my parents were in one early on in my life, so I got to see that. It's amazing, some of these people, how passionate they get about them. I mean, to the point where things like, you think pyramid scheme, you think just like, you know, throwing your money away. But I mean, I'm even talking things like Scentsy, Avon, Mary Kay, you know, all the ones where they say, you know, oh, well, you like the products, you know, come over and we'll have a Mary Kay party. But, you know, if you were a seller, you'd get a discount and then you could recruit other people under you. And then whenever they sell things, you get a cut of it. And so it supposedly builds up and up and up. So all of these are along the same lines of, you know, distributed wealth. You know, if you don't just buy the stuff, if you actually become a seller under me, then I'll get a little bit of yours, but then you can recruit people and then you can bring them in and then I'll get a little bit of theirs. You'll get a little bit of theirs.
I just heard an episode of a podcast, The Moth, recently, where this girl was talking about how like her whole family sells Mary Kay and she had no intention on doing it, but then she got sucked into it. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, if she decides to stop doing it now, she's just not her she's affecting. It's people like that her family signed her up will lose money and all these other, because it's
her upline and her downline.
Exactly. All these people will lose money if she pulls out of it. And then her family will be pissed at her and on and on and on. And she did it anyways at the end, because she was like, I just can't do this anymore, because Mary Kay and religion is becoming too much exactly the same. And she didn't have room for both.
And that's exactly what this is like, watching these people. It's funny. The same thing. You know, they just like one of the guys went to his mentor, you know, his upline, and was talking to him. He's like, I've got to do this. And he goes, no, you're not going to do that. He goes, but I've got something that'll help you out. And he opened up this old box and there were these cassette tapes. And he goes, these are bootleg tapes of the founder when he was talking on stage back when this all started. And the kid just like, he practically orgasmed in his pants. He's like, that's a 1983 Cincinnati. Oh my God. You'd let me listen to this. And he's like, yeah, I think you're ready for it. Because some of these people, like you said, it's like religion.
Yeah.
You know, they become so committed to it. They feel like part of the family and everything is about this when it's really just insidious. So I've been enjoying the hell out of that.
Nice.
I watched the first episode of The Spy on Netflix. This is something that I was interested in because it's Sacha Baron Cohen, but it's him in a serious role. Like, he's always Borat, you know, or the dictator or whatever.
I watched the first episode and last night, actually, and I was surprised myself because, again, I'm used to him seeing his over-the-top comedic type roles, and this was definitely not the case.
Nope. I'm very intrigued by this because it's based on a real story.
Eli, it's not Cohen. It's like,
right.
It's spelled Cohen, but it's pronounced like Cohen or
right.
Caught.
And or when something. Did it take place back in the 80s?
No, 1961 to 1965. Oh,
that's right. That's right. Yes. I was getting it confused.
It opens up with a rabbi coming to what appears to be a prison. And you see a guy who takes and he starts writing a letter. And you don't see his face or who he is at first. You just see his hands, or clearly he's either had fingernails ripped out or looks to be smashed with a hammer or whatever.
They've been fucked up.
And he starts writing a letter. And then it kind of goes back like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, whatever it is. And we get introduced to Eli Cohen and his wife and people around him and people from Mossad. And because it takes place in Syria or Israel or and it's Israel and Syria. And it's to do with the 6 Day War that eventually happens. And,
right.
And
we got a nice little montage of him training. I really appreciated that.
That was extensive. Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Teach you like certain things that he had to do, like telegraph, you know, counting the number of characters he could do in a minute.
Yeah.
And without mistakes. And, you know, at the end, in the beginning, it was like, you know, he got like 35 characters, 4 mistakes. And then by the end, it was like, you know, 145 characters, no mistakes. He's like, I could do better.
Yeah.
You know, and watching his physical progression. But the whole story behind this, again, I've only watched one episode. You've only watched one.
Just the one.
But it's a guy who essentially was put undercover and got so deep that he kind of forgot who he was. Left behind a wife, pregnant wife. She wasn't pregnant in the beginning of the montage part, but then no, she was.
She was at the end. And, like, I know what happens.
Right.
Like, I haven't seen the whole miniseries, but I know what happens.
It's only 6 episodes.
Yeah, it's only 6 episodes, but I know what happens to the guy. So.
Yeah. But you're still going to watch it?
Yeah. I found it
pretty good.
I'm intrigued by the story.
Yep.
I'm also really intrigued by Sacha Baron Cohen, like, being serious.
I know. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But he does it very well.
Yeah.
He's not – this is definitely not his character in Talladega Nights.
No.
This is
– or any of his other movies. Right. I've never seen him do anything serious. Everything he knows, he's been a comedic character, usually maybe in costume or made-up accent or made-up story or whatever it is. Usually
it's almost always an accent.
Humor that I don't understand.
Right.
But this is different.
And taken way too far.
Yeah.
But like, most of the humor in Borat or The Dictator was just – it was too far. Like, it becomes that uncomfortable humor, to me at least.
Yeah, same here. But no, he's in a very serious role and he's doing it. I don't know. First episode was excellent.
Mm. Yeah. I'm looking forward. It's hard for me to watch just because it's so washed out. I know it's supposed to be from back in the 60s.
Oh yeah.
But it's so gray and plain and washed out. Yeah.
But, I'm enjoying it. They have, there's an actor on it. Noah Emmerich.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yes.
Beautiful Girls, Truman Show, Frequency, Little Children, Super 8, all kinds of stuff. And he's a Mossad agent on the show. And he's Eli Cohen's handler, I guess, the guy that brought him in. And it's his handler. And so, yeah, it's solid. I'm enjoying it. I only watched one other show.
What was that?
Carnival Row.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I've got Carnival Row and The Dark Crystal.
What about The Dark Crystal?
It's still phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm purposely only watching one episode a week because I love it so much. And I really want to spread it out.
How many episodes have you watched?
2.
Okay.
But the story continues on. Okay, remember how I told you in the first episode that right in the beginning they talk about how the Skeksis came down and they gave the Elder a way to see into the universe?
Yeah.
They go into even more detail right in the very beginning of this one. It wasn't just that. It's like a whole astrolabe, and she literally is projecting herself out in the universe. Because right. In the very beginning of this episode, she, like, wakes up, and there's a little, what are they called? They're not Gelflings, but they're another one of the little creatures that kind of have their own language, and usually the subtitles will say talking in that language. And he's kind of like the caretaker of the place, and she's like, how long was I out this time? And he goes, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, that long? She's like, you were a young man when I last saw you. And he goes, blah, blah, blah. She goes, your grandfather? What? So she's projecting herself out for hundreds of, I think they call them trines, not years.
Yeah.
Which, that's another thing I can really, really appreciate is I have a hang up with sci-fi shows and fantasy shows that always use our current measurements.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you're watching a show like Game of Thrones. If they said, you know, oh, he's 20 miles away, I'd be like, come on, miles, fuck you. The same thing with people who are like, oh, it's been 20 years. Okay. Does everybody in the universe say years?
Even in space shows, they use 24 hours as a day.
I know. Yeah. I know. And it kind of bugs me. But in this case, I like it because, you know, they use trine. Yeah. So, this show is just great. And I don't want to give away much because it's creepy and it's beautiful. And I love these characters so much. It is so much fun watching this. I just can't get over it. I really hope you start watching it so we can talk about this because I don't want to, again, I don't want to get too far ahead, but I also don't want to, like, spoil it all because I really think you have to experience it. Knowing what a fan you are.
How many episodes of Carnival Row have you watched?
Three.
I've watched two.
Okay.
I watched the first two last night, actually.
Okay.
And then tonight, before you came over, I told my wife, I was like, let's watch this show. I think you might like it. So I watched the first episode again today. I kind of almost want to just watch these shows slowly as well. I don't want to binge them.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed Carnival Row.
It's a good show.
It's only going to be 9 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon, of course. Orlando Bloom is excellent.
He is.
Yeah.
Who would have thought Legolas?
Yeah. He's the inspector on this. I gotta pull up some facts here. Just give me a second because I just do. I thought the first episode was too packed.
Oh, yeah. They throw you into it.
It was an hour long, and it was a long hour.
Like, I'll tell you this. I'm 3 episodes in, and all I have learned about the word critch is that everybody uses it for just about everything. Like, I thought critch, like, I thought that there were fae and there were critch, and the critch were, like, the goat people.
No, I think critch is a slang term to describe everybody who's not a human.
Not a human.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've come to realize as well.
But they haven't – okay, so in the first 2 episodes, they haven't really explained anything other than you have the Burg.
Yep.
Which is where they are.
Yep.
But that's also the name of the people. Like, right. That's, oh, you found for a Bergman?
Yep. Then kind of like an American.
Right.
You know, and they live in America.
But then you have the Pact.
Yes.
Who the Berg and the Pact apparently had a war.
Mm-hmm.
And they still hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pact has taken over where all the Fae lives. Was it Tourmaline or?
Tir-Nanoq.
Tir-Nanoq. Sorry. Tourmaline was her friend.
Yep.
And the Pact is just apparently wiping out all the Fae and who have escaped to the Berg. And they live on Carnival Row. And they're indentured servants, but they're not slaves, but they're indentured servants, right. Or they're maids, or they're butlers, or whatever they are.
They're except held for on the one that moves in next door to those.
Yes, they're held on a lower social tier, except for that one guy. And I don't know. It's hard for
you. You were thrown right into the middle of it.
Yeah, because it starts right out with the Pact chasing down some Fae, executing all of them, basically.
Yeah. Yep. And you find out that Cara Delevingne's character was basically a runner. She was like a Harriet Tubman type who was trying to help them escape and lost all of them and goes to the ship and goes, yeah, everybody's lost. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then the ship capsizes.
The ship sinks. She's the only one that survives.
And so the guy who owned the ship, who was on it and dead, his kids inherit her. And the brother is really pissed about this because he's like, I should have gotten the ship. I should have gotten the business. Instead, I get you, and we're pretty much broke now.
Yeah, that's where he invested all our money was on this. Yeah.
And the
he tries to rape her.
Yes, he does.
In the second episode.
Which then she just leaves, and I'm kind of glad about that. Like, she's like, no, I'm not sticking around for this. Because basically they make her a servant. And
housemaid type person,
Yeah.
It's weird. At first, like, she's like the sister's personal servant, but at the same time, she's scrubbing toilets and.
Yep. This is definitely one of those shows where they throw you in almost as if you've been watching it for a while.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
And we know that Vignette.
Yep.
The
Cara Delevingne's character.
Thank you.
Yep.
She and Orlando Bloom's character there, Fido?
Yes.
Philo?
Philo.
Were romantically involved.
Yep.
She thought he was dead.
Yep.
He was fighting in the war.
Yep.
And then she thought he was dead because some girl came to her with bloody hands and was like, she's dead. And he's not dead. Well, she finds that out when she gets to the Berg and she's pissed, rightfully so.
Threatens to kill him.
Yeah. And he's like, I told her to tell you that I was dead.
And we find out that she had a widow's braid.
A widow's braid, yeah.
And she cuts it off in front of him.
Yeah.
Because now she's like, I'm not a widow because you're not dead. I will tell you this. episode three
yep.
is awesome because episode three is a flashback, the whole episode.
Oh, good.
And it takes you back to when they met.
Okay.
And you get to see the war. You get to see the pact and what they're doing. And you get to see, it will explain everything. It's almost as though this one should have come first, but I'm kind of glad it didn't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Philo's an inspector. He's like a detective cop.
Mostly based around Faye.
Yeah, issues. And he's helping with Faye issues. And there, he has some sort of secret that Vignette knows about.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, if everyone knew your secret, then you'd be in trouble. And he's like, you wouldn't tell them. And then...
Yeah, you'll find out in the third episode.
Oh, good.
Like, I'm that's not a spoiler. That's just, they lay everything out in the third episode. Oh, good. Like, you come into the third episode, you're like, wow, okay. If this had been the first episode, I would... feel more comfortable, but it's still really done well.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed it so far very thoroughly.
Good.
These first two episodes. I almost find it too complicated to explain.
Yes.
Really.
Yep.
In the first episode, Philo's dealing with some sort of killer that's called, not Jack the Ripper. It's something Jack, some name that they have. Oh, God. There.
What was it? Yeah. Because he comes around every 3 weeks.
Yeah, every 3 weeks a new Faye gets killed, usually bludgeoned to death. And
with a tack hammer.
Yeah, and Philo figures out that it's a – at first he thinks it's a fellow cop and confronts him, but then he finds out it's a Navy guy.
Because somebody survived, and the person said he was wearing a uniform. He had mutton chops but a shaved head, and he's like, that's a cop. You know, who else wears a uniform? Oh, yeah. Wait. The Navy guys are offshore every 3 weeks to blow off steam.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Who had to port every 3 weeks. And yeah.
And the guy, Unseelie Jack. That's what it was.
Unseelie Jack, yeah.
And the guy didn't even try to hide it when he was confronted. He goes, hey, you. And he runs and he's like, and yeah,
throws a hammer at his head.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then they have
the murder weapon.
A dramatic chase scene that ends, you know, with one of them not living.
Yep.
Guess who it is. But, you know, Seelie Jack makes some sort of statement about some dark god creature thing that they brought with them and alludes to some, like, all these Fae need to die because of this horribleness that he somehow knows about. But he's vague.
Yep.
And then, you know, he's done for. Then we don't get to hear anything more. But then, of course, the episode ends with some weird creature-like thing coming out of the sewer, muckling onto a Fae. And as we find out, episode two, eating her liver and disemboweling her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you have, like, a lot of the Fae working as prostitutes, a lot of the Pixies working as prostitutes, and they all live in the slums, which is Carnival Row, and it's not the best. So the second episode, after Vignette there gets away from the stuck-up lady and her brother.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The rich girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Who isn't really rich, but...
No, she acts it. Well, she thinks she is. They go to press charges, but then Philo pays off her debt and gets her freedom from her. And then she hooks up with this, like, underground group and has to steal the flag from the police station.
Yeah, she's basically going to be kind of what she was over there.
Yeah.
You know, a runner, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, they have to make a distraction so that she can steal the flag out from under their noses. But then everybody sees... And apparently everybody hates the Pixies because they can fly and the humans can't. That's what they say, at least. Yeah.
So, but anyhow.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it, yeah. I think it's really great.
I can't wait till you watch the third episode because it was really awesome.
And then, I mean, there's other characters we haven't talked about, like the politician guy who's the chancellor of the council, and then his son's off going to the whorehouse all the time. And then
right.
He gets kidnapped. Turns out it's his mom that did it because political shit. So it's just...
So you didn't say, did Kate enjoy it?
I asked her, I was like, so what do you think? She's like, she said, it's all right. I'm not real sure. It's kind of a little bit over my head. And, yeah, it's a little bit over my head, but, you know, whatever. And then you showed up, like, literally as, like, the credits hit. I heard your door close. So I haven't asked her yet if she wanted to watch the next episode. But I told her before this one, watch the second episode. You know, there's less going on Because there's a lot going on in the first episode. And then now if you say the third one's as good as it is, then, of course, I just read something that I'm not going to say out loud. When I'm sitting on Wikipedia and I'm looking at just the first episode summary. Mm-hmm. And then I look up and it says, oh, Erica Starkova as Aisley blah, 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 turned life of a scavenger. Her death is at the hands of blah, blah. Huh. Great.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, it's a big plot twist that gets revealed, which maybe they answer in the third episode. I don't know. Did they talk about that girl that gets disemboweled at the end of episode one at all?
I believe they do.
Did they reveal a big fucking thing about who she is? Because you would know.
No, okay. I don't think that they did.
Then stay away from that Wikipedia page.
Okay. Now I'm wondering, though.
Oh. But quite frankly, reading that doesn't surprise me.
Okay.
Hold on a sec. We're gonna pause this real quick. Hold on. Very interesting.
Yes. Especially the part about the prostitute.
Yep. So anyways, we weren't even talking about the show. I wish. Did you watch anything else?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me look at my list here. Oh, three episodes that I will recap very quickly of Adam Ruins Everything.
Three episodes.
Because, okay. Again, last week I'd forgotten to write them down. So basically, Adam Ruins Doing Good.
All right.
There's some basic stuff in here. I didn't realize this, but apparently there's a program called Teach America. Mm-mm. Or Teachers for America. Mm-hmm. And what it is it's supposed to fill in missing teacher spots with people who are basically scabs. You know, they're cheap labor, they can come in, they can teach, but it's actually ruining the whole system because it's keeping honest teachers out of those jobs. And these people that go in, they don't pay them benefits, they don't pay them a good wage, which teachers already don't get a good wage.
Right.
So it's actually doing that. Ineffectiveness of recycling. This was part of Doing Good. He basically said that most stuff that you recycle can only be recycled once. And after that, like plastic bottles, they can only be recycled once. After that, they have to be turned into something else because they're too contaminated at that point. Also, a lot of times when people recycle things, they think they're doing good, but they're actually fucking up. So like a pizza box, it's cardboard. You recycle it. But if it has grease on it, it's going to contaminate all the other cardboard and it'll make it all useless. To the point where the country that bought the most recyclable stuff from us, China, has now started refusing to buy any more from us because too much of our stuff has been contaminated.
So here's something that's interesting. I'm going to get on this
rant. Absolutely.
Then why, glass is something that can be recycled over and over and over again.
Yep.
Why are we going back to glass bottles then?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
It's probably more expensive, easier to break. You know, they probably got some kind of reasons.
If you can only recycle the plastic once, okay, great. We'll recycle it the one time. What about after that?
Well, think about when we were growing up and people would have cars that the parts on them would last for 20, 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And nowadays it's like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And we're okay with that. Like,
we shouldn't be.
No, we shouldn't.
But well, you know what it is? It's because, like, well, the part that lasts you 10 years is $300. And the part that lasts you 2 years is $89.
Yeah. And people go, oh, that's cheaper. Well, no, long run.
But then sometimes if you're facing...
I won't even own it for 20 years.
But if you're facing the scenario of like you're short money that week, you can't afford $300, but you can afford $89, now my car's at least fixed.
For the next 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. And finally, he talked about, you know, the billionaires who create charities and create funds to help the needy, and how basically all it does is help themselves. Most of the money doesn't even go to the people that it needs to go to.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
These charities are more of a tax break for them.
Well, yeah.
And they don't really do any good.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
No. The next episode was really weak. It was Adam Ruins a Murder. And the only thing that was, there were a couple of cool things out of it, but for the most part, it seemed weak to me. But basically, like, the first part was how people who hit and kill pedestrians or bicyclists almost never get prosecuted. They will often side with the people who were driving the vehicles, saying, you know, well, the guy jumped out in front of him, or, you know, the biker should have been watching more carefully. It's not always the case.
accent, really? I mean,
but, come on. Dude, I'll tell you this. I watched this a couple days late. You know, I had it on my DVR and I watched it. Literally the next morning I woke up and I was watching the news as I was getting ready for work. And there was a ticker at the bottom of the screen. It's always like the headlines. And one of them literally said, car strikes bicyclist in critical condition, driver not charged.
That's funny.
And I was like, wow, that's really a thing apparently. But I guess that's a common thing in the country right now is that the people who drive are less likely. Now, I'm not talking about the cases like a year back when that guy swerved lanes during the toy run and took out seven people.
Okay. Well, at the same time though, that's
different. This is more pedestrians and bicyclists.
Right.
So then he jumped right from there into Border Patrol. And I'm like, how is this a murder? This is supposed to be Adam Ruins a murder. But one thing that I found interesting about this, do you know what the border zone is?
It's a stretch between the border, like 200 yards or something.
Nope.
Oh, what?
This is a stretch anywhere where there is a physical or water border. So we're talking the Canadian border, the border between states, a body of water. Anywhere there's a border like that for 100 miles from it is considered the border zone. And anyone from the Border Patrol can pull over anyone they want in there. They can set up a checkpoint anywhere they want in there, even if it's between major cities, because that is part of the border zone. 100 miles. Like, they showed a map of the United States. Maine is all border zone.
Yeah.
Because you've got the water, you've got our bordering states and Canada, and then 100 miles in each direction. I mean, there's like this little tiny dot in the middle. But New Hampshire, Vermont, those are all border zone. Massachusetts, all border zone.
Yeah.
So most of the, I think it's like 2/3 of the country is border zone. So they can just put up a checkpoint anywhere they want and do whatever they want. They can detain you. They can, he was talking about things like how in the 60s they were allowed to do racial profiling. So they could do things like they could stop you if they thought you had a Mexican haircut. Don't know what that is, but, and then the last part was about corpses and how it's only been recently that we've actually been able to use corpses for medical studies. This is where grave robbers came from.
Yeah.
Grave robbers weren't there just to be perverts. They were there because doctors learn on corpses.
Right.
And most people back in the 1800s were like, it is sacrilege to use a dead body for that kind of thing. What are you possibly going to learn from it? So they had to be underhanded and hire grave robbers. And it was a very unsavory business until it finally became legal. This was very interesting. You probably already know this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Do you know what the most deadly animal in North America is?
House cat.
Nope.
What?
Deer.
Why?
Deer kill over 168 people per year, mostly in car accidents.
Okay. I wasn't thinking about for people. I was thinking about in general. I've seen on specials like the world's deadliest animals.
Right, right, right.
And they did it based on the fact that house cats have like a lion has maybe like 20 animals that it preys upon, whereas a house cat has like 300 different species that it preys upon.
Fair enough.
And a house cat kills for pleasure, not for food, or kills for fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, when it comes to not only killing people, but this was the other thing is Emily presented the fact. She said that there's an island in the Caribbean where all the deer ate every berry producing bush. And that was the food source for the bears. And the bears on that island went extinct. And the deer still lived because the deer somehow killed an apex predator just by eating all their food supply. But yeah, over 168 people every year are killed by deer, usually in car accidents.
I think that number sounds low to me.
It does. Like that sounds like Maine.
Yeah.
Much less the rest of the North America. It was a pretty weak episode, honestly. Last night's though, Adam Ruins music.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking phenomenal. He started off with the racial inequality in rock and roll and how basically everybody that you see like Elvis and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, all of them got all of their inspiration, all of their music, everything from black people. But it was a very racist time. They actually early music stores would market anything by African-American people as race music. Yeah. And then it became rhythm and blues later on. But they actually showed, You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog is not Elvis's. He covered it, and it was by a very large black woman.
Really?
Yep. She was the one who came up with it, who created it, who sang it first, and then he covered it and became famous for it.
I had no idea about that one.
Yeah. Most of the songs that you hear were originally done by black artists. They were talking about how like Muddy Waters actually created the first notable rhythm. There was another one. I can't remember his name now, but yeah, it was very interesting to watch. Then he talked about Ticketmaster. Yeah. Ticketmaster and Live Nation and how essentially they own the entire industry. Now he talked about 1982, people would go to a concert and they would go to the ticket office and they would buy their tickets. And then Ticketmaster came up with this idea and said, hey, we could let them call in on the telephone. You remember these days? You call in on the phone to Ticketmaster and you order your tickets. And they got to charge their fees. And they just made up the fees for whatever they want.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No surprise.
Yeah. In fact, in a class action lawsuit, the CEO of Ticketmaster actually said, yeah, honestly, some of these fees are undefendable. I can't.
Not some of them.
Yeah. So Ticketmaster started out just by doing concerts. And as you know, as well as I do, they started going into other things. But basically, they took over the concert industry by convincing record labels and record producers, hey, you should go through us because when we charge these fees, we'll kick back a little bit to you. So they did it to the record labels. They did it to the auditoriums, the venues.
Yeah.
And they set up all these deals with them to the point where all of a sudden they literally had a monopoly. They were the only game in town. And he talked about, and I remember this one, I'm sure you do too, Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam tried to protest them.
Yes.
And Pearl Jam said, we will not sell any of our tickets through Ticketmaster. And then Ticketmaster called every fucking venue and said, don't let them play or you're out. And everybody blacklisted Pearl Jam in 1993. And they had to cancel their tour. They lost like $50 million because they couldn't book anywhere because they wouldn't go through Ticketmaster.
Now, all right, so this is what pisses me off about Ticketmaster. WWE's coming to town. Take the whole family. $15 a ticket. So, you know, ticket starting at $15.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means me and my three kids can all go for, you know, $60. No. No, it's over $100 after all the Ticketmaster fees. Because you have the Ticketmaster fee, you have the venue fee, which is like $2. But then you have the Ticketmaster fee, which is like $8 a ticket.
And the convenience fee.
Then the convenience fee. And then, oh, this is before you could print at home. Now we're going to charge you for shipping them to you, which is like $3 or something, or $3.50.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's absolutely absurd. It's fucking absurd. When I'm back in 2004 or 2005, I want to say, the Augusta Civic Center still did their own tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So WWE came to town, and it's the last time I stood in line overnight to buy tickets. I think I got out there at 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
That's actually how I met Rude for the first time. But I got there like 10 o'clock at night, stood in line all night, and the next morning tickets went up there, and the only way you could get tickets was by phone. Well, I went up there or in person at the box office.
Yeah.
And you went up there and the tickets were already printed. He was like, I want two in the front row. Oh, these are the last two. Here you go. And they set them down. And you paid for them. You paid a $2 ticket fee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after that, they went to Ticketmaster. And now all the tickets are online. However, and this is true with Ticketmaster, people need to realize this, it's hard to get the better seats this way because Ticketmaster does local pre-sale. They do local pre-sales. They do, fan club pre-sales, this pre-sale, that pre-sale. And I'll tell you right now, pre-sale and VIP tickets don't always mean you get the best seats.
No, they do not.
No.
Nope.
As we saw, we went to Weird Al. We were sitting in the third row, and people that had VIP placards on because they bought the VIP Weird Al packages were sitting behind us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, so it's not the best way to get tickets, but like when WWE comes to the Augusta Civic Center, I go to the box office and I buy my tickets directly from them. I can pick the seats I want and you only get charged a $2 venue fee. You don't get any of the Ticketmaster fees.
Thanks.
And they're still Ticketmaster broker. So you can go to the box office and save all those fees, but you're most likely not going to get the best seats. And if it's a hot ticket, it'll be sold out before you get to the box office when it opens.
Well, chances are, even if you're paying minimal fees, they're still going to Ticketmaster. Because in 2010, the Obama administration allowed Ticketmaster and Live Nation Live Nation is the organizer of all these big venues,
yeah,
all these big labels.
Yeah.
They basically have all the publicity, all the everything.
Yep.
Allow them to merge and become the most powerful conglomeration of bullshit
yeah.
you've ever seen. And it just, it makes me sad because I remember the early days of Ticketmaster and how everyone was like, this is new. This sucks. You know, I was on hold forever or I couldn't get through.
Yeah.
And then when I finally did, it was an automated system.
Yeah.
It was hard as shit to get tickets.
Yeah. It was sucked. You had to go to the box office.
And even nowadays, it's hard as shit sometimes.
To even, like, a lot of times you log on and you don't know, wait, am I buying a ticket? It used to be simple. Either they're, I had them on Ticketmaster or they didn't. Mm-hmm. If you want, if you had to buy them, if someone already bought them or you want to get them secondhand or whatever, you went to StubHub
yeah.
or some other ticket broker and you bought them that way. Now, oh no, Ticketmaster has resale tickets right there. You can scoop up your tickets and then just resell them right through Ticketmaster.
And I don't know how they're allowed to do this because it's completely monopolistic.
Yeah.
There is literally no other game out there because even if they pop up, yeah. they get crushed.
Yeah. It's like when I tried to, we were going to go to New Japan Pro Wrestling Ring of Honor show at Madison Square Garden. Okay. I went to the show, but when they announced the ticket prices, they said the tickets were going to be as low as, I think, $30 and expensive as like $250.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, fuck it. We're buying the $250 tickets. We want to try to get front row. We're going to do it. So I had the presale code and everything because I was an Honor Club member. And I get my presale code and I go in. Second they go and say, I punch my code in and I look. And front row is $1,000 a seat because Ticketmaster made all the first three rows platinum tickets. Another new fucking scam they have.
Yep.
Which you get nothing extra for that. You don't get like VIP treatment or come in this. That. No, no. Oh, these are
no hand jobs at the door.
Platinum tickets at like, you know, $1,000 a pop. I fucking hate Ticketmaster so much.
Yep.
I really do.
Well, this didn't make them look any better.
Oh, because no, nothing they can do makes them better.
Nope.
They have no justification for taking a 5,000-seat venue and charging on every ticket over $10 a ticket in fees.
Right. Right. There's no reason behind
that. Absolutely, like, no, it's absurd. It's yep. absolutely absurd. Yeah. Now, Ticketmaster can suck a dick.
The last part that you talked about was the digital landscape of music these days. So when you and I were younger and yeah. you had things like Napster and LimeWire, people were illegally downloading music
right.
and all the artists suffered, you know, because we were all stealing from them. Well, now you've got things like Spotify and Apple Music. Yeah. Well, here's the kicker on that. So Spotify, which I love,
yeah.
you know, say I want to listen to Pearl Jam, for yeah. instance. Well, the record label that owns all of Pearl Jam stuff signed the deal with Spotify. So they opened up their entire catalog and said, here you go.
Yep.
For X number of dollars, we can do this. Almost none of it goes to the artists.
Nope.
It goes to the record label.
All right.
So the artists are still getting fucked.
Yep. But by their own record labels.
But by their own record labels.
I saw a thing, headline a couple weeks back, whatever, which basically said this year, 2019, is the first year since 1986 that vinyl is going to outsell CDs.
Good. I think that's cool.
People aren't buying CDs anymore.
Right.
Kay bought a CD for her car the other day for Wesley. She bought the new Mary Poppins soundtrack on CD so she could have it in the car to play for Wesley and then move it to my vehicle or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. She's only had it for like a week and it's literally sat in her CD player the whole time. It's already got a nick on it. It's already got a skip mark on it.
Well, remember when we were coming back from the most recent Weird Al and Johnny's phone died?
Yeah.
And I plugged mine in. You were like, oh, you got a Weird Al playlist? Well, no, I went on Spotify and typed in Weird Al.
Yeah.
And the first one had 194 songs. Okay. Right. Somebody else created it. It's all his music. Just hit shuffle. There yeah. you go.
Yeah.
You know, I pay my $8.99 a month to have the ability to skip songs and not listen to ads.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't be happier, honestly, because I listen to it all the time. But yeah, so that's why a lot of these artists have to do things like shill products. They were like, what about going on tour? Now, it turns out that the cost of the tours, most of the money goes back to the record labels and the producers and everything. They said only the top 40 acts in the world actually make money on their tours.
See, but I have a hard time with that because if that was true, then all these little, smaller bands wouldn't be on tour.
Why do you think they do like three or four of them at a time?
Three or four bands, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, like, so we went to a show. We saw two bands. We saw Garcia Peoples and Kurt Vile and the Violators.
Mm-hmm.
They're not with Live Nation. They're right. doing their own thing.
Yeah.
I don't even think, and I don't think Garcia Peoples is even with a record label. You know what I mean? So, like, I think you still have those grassroots type people that are doing good.
Yep.
And then you have, like, your top headlines you're talking about. And then I think you have a lot of middle of the road people that are all signed with Live Nation, this record, that record, or whatever.
Yep.
And I mean, they obviously have to be making enough to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you still at least have some of those, like, grassroots people that are kind of doing their own thing, you know?
You know, it's like, for a reference that you do is independent wrestling.
Yeah, you know? I was going to make that
same
analogy,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Difference between WWE and the little independent guys. Right. You know, those guys that come up to Fairfield, they're not making a lot of money.
No, they're not.
You know, they still have 9-to-5 jobs. They're still doing shit. That's why a lot of these artists, they were saying, you know, shill products or, you know, have to do tours, signing tours, stuff like that. You know, they have to do something to supplement their income because they're not making the money like they are. The highest paid. Who was it? The highest paid artist last year in, I'm going to get this wrong, but basically it was one of the highest paid people was Diddy, and he hasn't made a record in 7 years.
Yeah.
But he was still based on, you know, this sale, that sale.
Right.
It's fucked. The whole system's fucked. Did you see, though, that Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy are going on tour?
Nope.
It's kind of cool. I would check that out. It's going to be in Boston.
I don't want to go to Boston.
That's as close as it's getting. But speaking of which, you and I discovered something this week, that Jay and Silent Bob reboot movie tour is actually coming to Portland in February.
Yeah, tickets go on sale like tomorrow?
I think that's VIP goes on sale. But yeah, it's the 20th, I believe, is when they go
on sale. Okay, so next Friday.
Yeah. And we've talked many times on this podcast, and I mentioned this to you, that Kevin Smith is not as good as he was.
No.
He's really...
I don't think so.
Not that good anymore. But this is an event. This is something that I would pay the $25 and go see. You know, see the two of them up there droning on, and then watch their movie in the State Theater with like-minded people. I'd check that out.
How long will they talk, though, I wonder? It's a Thursday night. It's not like they can keep us there until midnight.
Well, the next stop on their tour is Albany, New York, I believe.
And that's an airplane ride.
Right.
Okay, so on sale to the general public is Friday the 20th at 10 a.m.
Yep.
The local pre-sale starts on Wednesday the 18th at 10 a.m., ends Thursday the 19th at 10 p.m. And then VIP ticket packages start at September 18th at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah. I wonder what a VIP ticket package gets you.
Get to smoke weed with him. I guarantee he's going to say something about that, weed being legal in Maine and how much he likes it.
Oh, probably.
But anyway.
See, it just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't.
If you don't want to go, man.
No, I'd like to go. I just want to sit in the back of the balcony.
Right.
Because I think that's going to suck.
Yes, I agree.
I think that's going to suck.
So did you watch any trailers this week?
Not that I can think of.
Really?
Yeah.
You're still adjusted to the new schedule.
I really am.
I watched the trailer for Bad Boys for Life. Will Smith and Martin Lawrence coming back together. Okay, moving on.
I don't think I missed anything.
Man. No, you didn't. I did watch the preview for Blumhouse's Black Christmas remake.
Okay, I did see that.
That looks cool.
That does look good.
Blum's doing a good job.
I'm a big fan of Blumhouse and what he's doing, yeah.
And then I just watched one that popped up today that I'm actually really interested in. I think you and your wife are going to be interested in. It's an Amazon original series coming October 18th. It's called Modern Love. And it's a TV series. It's an anthology series about different people dealing with love in different ways. It's got people like Anne Hathaway in it.
We like her.
I can't think of his name, but the one who played the priest in Fleabag and also Moriarty in Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. There's a number of people that are good actors that'll show up in this. I almost thought that it was one of those Love Actually type movies, but it's a TV series. And it's they're all trying to navigate their own problems in love, whether it's finding love, keeping love, dealing with somebody who's different. It's an Amazon series. It's a series.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it. I'll check it out. I'm a romantic at heart. What you got for news?
I'm going to go back a little bit.
Oh, good.
So this is the VIP experience at a theater in Oregon.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's going to be ours or what, but because they didn't have anything listed for ours. But VIP meet, you're in a front row seat plus a one-on-one time and a picture with Kevin and Jay. includes a commemorative VIP laminate, ultra-exclusive VIP collectible merchandise. VIP photo op is a seat in rows A through F, plus a picture with Kevin and Jay, and you get merchandise and shit. And the VIP exclusive merch is rows A through G. Oh, it's a seat in row G through H, plus the merchandise, blah, blah, blah. So the VIP meet and greet is $746.
Yeah, that's not happening.
The VIP photo op is $196. And the exclusive merchandise VIP is $97.
No, none of that is happening.
Tickets are just $29 to $46 on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for us it's like $25 to $40 or something.
Now, if I go to a different VIP, let's see here. Vancouver, British Columbia. So these are Canadian dollars.
Mm.
Okay, VIP photo op experience here is $220. And the VIP package one isn't even listed, so I'm guessing it's sold out. Because it's just VIP package two, seats 1 through 10, or GA with early entry, $220, $222. And just because we're, you know, why not? We're just kind of hanging out here. VIP in Colorado. Let's see here. Yeah, standard purchase, $700. One-on-one time with Kevin and Jay. So you must get like private talking points to them. $700. And people must be buying this. I mean, you and I won't be, but people must be buying this. That's just absurd. $700. What an arrogant fucking prick. Yeah, here we go. General admission, $50. VIP photo op, $200. VIP meet and greet, $750.
Jesus.
This is in Arizona.
$750?
Yep.
I mean, if you were rich, if you had money to burn, it might be nice to spend $750 to be like, dude, lay off the fucking weed.
I don't think I
and then just walk out.
I don't think I would have spent $750 years ago when I was a much bigger fan. No, I wouldn't have spent money then. No.
If it had been $750 and I got to meet Kevin Smith and say the cast of Clerks,
yeah,
all
everybody,
yep, Brian O'Halloran,
he had a cool ass poster signed.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Get them all the sign. Mallrats?
Yeah.
Cast the Mallrats?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you got any news?
I do. Do you?
I got one thing.
What you got?
Mad About You's coming back.
I saw that. I saw the commercial on TV. That's weird.
Yeah, it's coming back. It's going to be, I think it's six episodes. Or
now, let's be clear.
Yeah.
The TV series itself, the old series, is coming back. In syndication on one of these channels, like Fox or something like that.
No, this is.
But then.
This is a revival.
Yeah.
With the original cast. Or at least with Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt.
Yep.
It's going to be. It comes out November 20th. The first six episodes are going to be released on November 20th and then six more on December 18th.
Wow.
And it's part of Spectrum Originals.
That's what it was. Spectrum. Yeah, because they had a commercial the other day for it, and they were showing clips of the old show, Mad About You. And they were like, oh, yeah. Paul and Jamie or whoever the names were. And they said, you know, we're going to be airing all the episodes. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then they were like, but wait, they're coming back. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it's a 12-episode limited series, and it's going to be part of Spectrum Originals, which is the cable company, Spectrum or Charter Spectrum Cable Company.
Which they've been doing that recently. They just released a it's basically Bad Boys, except for it's with women. It's Jessica Alba and Gabriel Anwar. Union.
Is this Gabriel Union?
Yeah.
Is this like their own channel?
Yep. It's not even a channel. It's you have to go into the app or you go into the DVR and go to Spectrum Originals.
Okay. Well, that's what it is. So it's part of the Spectrum Originals. What you got for news?
All right, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Netflix has signed Patty Jenkins for a multi-year deal.
Hmm.
She's the one who did Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
They didn't say what for, just she's signed on for multi-years.
Okay.
The actors who played Garcia Flynn and Gia from Timeless are both coming to The Boys season two.
Okay.
I can get behind this.
Yeah.
I like both of them.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one.
I wish Timeless would come back.
I know. Milo Ventimiglia.
Yeah.
Okay. This is us. Yeah. Heroes. He's taking on the role of the most celebrated daredevil in history. The actor will trade in family drama for high-flying motorcycle stunts as the star of USA's upcoming limited series, Evil, based on the life of Evil Knievel.
I'm listening.
According to the Hollywood Reporter, Ventimiglia has signed on to star as Evil Knievel for USA, serving as executive producer of the series as well. Eaton Franklin from Shameless will write the blah, blah, blah. Evil will chronicle Knievel's preparations for his legendary Snake River Canyon jump in 1974.
Yeah, okay.
The series is being described as a portrait of a complex man living the American dream, juggling meteoric celebrity and raising a family, and the very real probability that his next jump will kill him.
Yeah, yeah. He thought he was going to die.
Yeah. God had a good reason there. So
he felt like he painted himself in a corner where he had no choice but to do this rocket jump on this rocket cycle or whatever, and literally thought when he climbed in there that he was not going to be alive in the end.
Yeah. So, and then he was.
Yeah.
And then at least he didn't jump the shark.
Fonzie style. Hey, yep. That's a little rough.
Jonah Hex is going to be on the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover.
Oh, okay, cool. They introduced him earlier, so that's great. Glad to see he's coming back.
When they said that, I was like, oh, that's right. He was on there a little bit. This one took me by surprise. November, we're getting the second season of End of the Fucking World.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was...
I didn't either. So you remember how the last one ended where the police closed in on him? She got caught. He ran.
Yeah.
So apparently they're going to pick up from there.
I had no idea that this was...
I didn't either. It kind of shocked me.
When was the first season?
It was a while back, wasn't it?
Like 2016, maybe even?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a while ago.
What was that one? The Aziz Ansari, Master of Nothing?
Yes.
I enjoyed that.
Master of None, I believe.
Yeah, Master of None. I enjoyed that.
I only watched the first
part. The second season was really good.
Was it?
It was all in black and white, practically. Oh, it was really... He was in Italy the whole time.
Hmm.
It was 2 years ago. Master of...
End of the
Fucking World came out 2017.
Like, I really liked that, but I thought that it was a self-contained, like, this is it. I didn't realize it was going to be multiple seasons. I thought it was done.
I didn't think it had anything to do with multiple seasons.
That's... and then it just all of a sudden, it popped up. It was like, oh, and by the way...
Yeah. November. Huh. Okay.
Now, this is interesting. Margot Robbie apparently has her own production company.
Okay.
And they've acquired the rights and are looking to reboot Tank Girl. And they've already got a director.
Okay. I wasn't a big fan of that movie.
Well, that's the thing, is it's such an obscure title. I know it was a comic.
Lori Petty.
Yeah. It was a comic book, and that's what it was based on. Yeah. But I just... it seems so weird and obscure that they'd be like, oh, let's pick that up and reboot it.
Yeah, that seems weird. It doesn't do anything for me.
Speaking of reboots.
Okay.
Paramount has started work on rebooting Face Off.
I did see something about that. I want to take his face off.
If they don't get those two to come back and at least do cameos, they're going to be missing out. I hope they don't. Okay. I shouldn't say that. I was going to say, I hope they don't do it as a comedy, but I could kind of see it as a comedy. Anyway, this is kind of sad. Disney Plus was going to be doing Muppets Live
Today. Oh, I did see that.
And now they've just pulled the plug on it.
Yeah.
I'm bummed about
that. I am too. They're still doing another Muppets type show.
Yeah, but it's not
the same. But it's not the same as this one that they announced. Yeah.
There's talk Hayley Steinfeld is probably going to be Kate Bishop in the Marvel Extended Universe. So this could be teasing at the Young Avengers.
Yeah.
So she was one of the Hawkeyes.
Yep.
Apple TV Plus has made their announcement. They're coming in November.
Yeah.
For $5 a month.
Yeah.
And they said, we've got all kinds of original shows. Here's the trailer for Jason Momoa in SEE, where it's the future and everybody on the planet has gone blind. And then they said, yes, we've got all kinds of original series. When we launch, there will be 7. Yeah, 7 original series when they launch. They've also said $5 a month, but they haven't said how many devices you can watch on at a time.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
Hmm.
So I found this really funny because they made that announcement during their whole, you know, here's the new iPhone, here's the new iPad, here's this. You know, oh, and Apple TV Plus, then it'll be fine. They made that announcement. Now, the very next day, I was looking at Instagram, and Disney Plus's Instagram came out. And it goes, hey, we heard you like cartoons. How about this? And they announced that when Disney Plus launches, oh, they're going to add some more things to it, like the entire Disney Afternoon catalog.
Whoa!
Okay. Every episode of the original DuckTales, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, Goof Troop, and Gargoyles.
Gargoyles?
Uh-huh. Every episode of Gargoyles. Oh, and then today they said, oh, that's two. Oh, and Mike, the gummy bears.
Yeah.
And then today they said, oh, is that too young for you? Well, how about the fact that we're going to add in all the X-Men and all the Fantastic Four and all the Hulk? And yeah. So, dude, they're loading us up with cartoons that we grew up on. Dude, when I saw Gargoyles, I lost my shit because the day before, Keith David had been doing an interview and he said that it was his favorite role was doing Goliath and he would love to come back and do him again. And the Disney Plus, like, hey, here's all the episodes. If they did a reboot of Gargoyles or brought them back,
that would be amazing.
That literally made my week. I was like, I wanted to send it to you, and then I'm like, no, I have to see his reaction in person.
I know, I'm the same way with certain things. Oh my God, that would be amazing. That's awesome.
I couldn't believe it. Dude, gummy bears. Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Gargoyles.
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 Yeah. So today they announced
Tailspin, that it was going Darkwing to be Darkwing Duck,
X-Men, Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk, and the Fantastic Four series from the 1990s. 70s and 80s series like Spider-Woman, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and 1981 Spider-Man will appear on the platform as well.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Dude. How is Disney Plus not the greatest thing in the world?
No, it is. Hey, good thing we bought that 3 years.
I know.
Already paid for.
Sad news.
No.
Robert Pattinson's Batman will not be meeting up with Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. The director has made this very clear. He said, no, they will never meet up. There will never be a crossover. They're their own separate things. So the current moving forward Batman and the current moving forward Joker will never be together. Way to go, DC. Keep that freight train running.
Now, will a different Joker appear in the
past in Batman? Don't know. This was the director of Joker, and he just said, no, it's not going to happen. Netflix accidentally leaked their own release date for the Witcher TV series.
Oh yeah?
Yep, December 17th. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
South Park has been renewed for seasons 24 through 26. I'm shocked that they're still going.
I forgot they were on still.
Now, this one just popped up today and I found this very interesting.
All right.
Ghostbusters reboot director Paul Feig.
Yeah.
Developing Dark Army film, reportedly featuring Universal Monsters.
Hmm.
Ghostbusters and A Simple Favor director Paul Feig is set to deliver Universal Pictures the all-new monster movie Dark Army, which Deadline claims will feature both new characters and iconic members of the Universal Monster Library. The only known details about the project are that Feig is set to write and direct the endeavor, as well as the title, though the reported connection to iconic Universal Monsters has ignited excitement and speculation.
Well, see, here's the thing. The Universal Monsters was like the oldest universe that there was for any movie franchise.
Creature from the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein's Monster, Dracula, Wolfman, the Mummy. Yeah,
exactly. And they were kind of not spoofed, but homaged in the Monster Squad.
Mm-hmm. Very well.
Oh, very
Come well. Come on. Yes. Give credit where credit is due.
Very, very well. But then, Monster Squad's a phenomenal film. But then... They had that dumbass Tom Cruise the Mummy film.
I knew you were going to say that.
You know, and that was supposed to spark the relaunch, and that just didn't go too well. That just didn't work. That didn't work at all. All right. Any other news or anything?
Well, I forgot that I had watched the trailer, and it's one of those that I'm going to show it to you after this.
Okay.
Because Apparently, this is something that has been talked about for a while, but I don't remember hearing anything about it.
Okay.
It's an adaptation of a book. It's called His Dark Materials. And it's coming out shortly. Like, it's an HBO series. And it's going to be premiering November 4th.
Okay.
And apparently it takes place in some world where, like, part of a person's soul manifests as an animal. It sounds vaguely familiar, but then they're like, oh, yeah, that thing that we've been talking about is coming out November 4th. And I'm like, I don't remember this. So I'll show you the trailer afterwards because it actually looks fucking great. And it's got the little girl who played X-23 in the Logan movie.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And a few others that you'll recognize. But, yeah, I think that's all I got this week.
All right. Well, I'm also out of stuff. So that's good.
Gargoyles.
I didn't think we'd be talking this long, to be honest, tonight. I had so little to talk about, but we've managed to get the hour and 14 in there. So good for us.
Well, we went off on some good tangents.
Tangents are always great. Ticketmaster
sucks. I can't decide if Gargoyles or Ticketmaster is going to be the title of the episode. Something to do with one or the other, because that was like the greatest news and the shittiest company in the world.
Gargoyles rules and Ticketmaster sucks.
There you go. Or
Ticketmaster rules.
I think we can fit them both in.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
All right.
All right. I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek G33K.
And that's this week's episode.
Later.